Hi, I'm Brian.
And I'm Sharon.
I had a 40-year porn addiction.
Porn was an unwelcome guest for 32 years of our marriage.
I found hope and freedom when I attended a Gateway to Freedom weekend.
And I found hope and the courage to begin my healing journey while attending Wives Care.
Don't be like us and allow porn to wreak havoc in your lives.
Reach out to Be Broken today.
To learn more about Gateway to Freedom, 3-day intensive for men, and Wives Care online groups, visit BeBroken.org or call 210-822-8201. That's BeBroken.org or 210-822-8201.
A few hours before I was getting ready to leave, something just hit me like a ton of bricks. I started to feel anxious and panicky. And because I've been doing work to befriend my triggers, I'm like, what is my body trying to tell me? Why am I starting to feel this way? I'm pushing my husband away. And I was starting to get very emotional. And so what I did was I stopped and said, when do I remember feeling like this before? And what about this day, what I'm doing right now, is similar to a time in the past that was not good? And it just clicked right there.
Good day, friends. Jonathan Darty here with another episode of the PSR Podcast, which is a listener-supported outreach of Be Broken Ministries. In today's episode, I sit down with Ashley Jameson from Pure Desire to explore how wives can navigate healing after sexual betrayal, particularly when dealing with emotional triggers. Ashley shares vulnerably from her own recovery journey, explaining what triggers are, how they affect our nervous system, and why befriending them is more powerful than suppressing them. We discuss rebuilding intuition after gaslighting, setting healthy boundaries, and practical grounding tools. Ashley reminds us that healing is possible and that connecting with a supportive community is absolutely essential for the journey forward. To learn more about Ashley, visit puredesire.org. For additional resources, you can visit our website at bebroken.org. We're going to put some links in today's show notes that will help you take your next steps. And also, friends, of course, I'm going to ask you to rate and review the podcast after listening, because this helps others to find it. And we especially encourage you to rate and review on Spotify. Now, before we get into my conversation with Ashley, I just want to invite you to consider giving toward our mid-year partnership invitation. We have just a few weeks left to reach our goal of $77,000 to ensure that we can keep producing and delivering excellent content like the conversation that you're about to hear. So please just take a moment today to pray about partnering with us. And you can offer your gift at bebroken.org/donate, or you can call us at 210-822-8201. And thank you so much for being a PSR listener and for your partnership in this ministry. Now let's dive into today's hope-filled conversation with Ashley. All right, so we have back with us on the program Ashley Jameson. So Ashley, welcome back.
So glad to be here. I always love to be here. I was just telling myself this morning that I was excited to feel like I'm having a conversation with an old friend. So I love being on this podcast.
Yeah, I'll take that as a meaning that our friendship has been a while. Not that I'm old, you know, like so. But anyway,
yeah.
That's true too. I got a lot of gray, you know, going
friendship.
On. That's yes. Right. That's right. No, I was excited about this too, because one of the things I've really enjoyed about having you on the program is that I feel like every time we have you on, you are not pigeonholed into like, well, this is all that Ashley can talk about. We've had you on to talk about like race as it pertains to addiction and, you know, sexual brokenness. We've had you on to talk about some parenting things. We've talked about marriage stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm really excited today because we're going to talk about specifically wives who've experienced betrayal, sexual betrayal in the relationship. But what happens in navigating kind of that healing journey when there's triggers that happen? And you talk about befriending your triggers after betrayal. So, you know, it's a subject that you're really passionate about, but let's talk about what you mean by befriending your triggers and maybe start with helping us understand what kind of triggers can come up in betrayal. And then we'll talk about how do you actually befriend them?
Yeah, so good. So whenever I get your invites for the podcast, say, hey, you want to come back on? I'm like, what's going on in my life right now? And so it's always really fresh content. And when your email came through, I had just come out of the most massive trigger I've had in over a decade. So my husband and I, our recovery journey started in 2013. And I've been on staff at Pure Desire for 10 years. And so I was in such a debilitating state. I feel like I'm stumbling over words. I was really thinking, I don't know if I even want to be married anymore. And I can say this honestly, because my husband and I used those triggers as friends, as messengers, to figure out what we needed. But I was so incredibly dysregulated. My internal system was screaming, you are going to die. You cannot live like this. I actually thought I was going to have a heart attack. It just felt like there was an electrical storm inside of my body. And so triggers, they can come out of nowhere. They're a reminder of the past, but you're experiencing it like you're living it right now. Like your brain, your body are feeling the right now-ness of it, that what happened to John and I in 2013 was happening in my body and brain as if it was happening in that moment. And so, yeah, that's what a trigger is. It's a flash. It's something that just flashes into your life suddenly. And it could be a smell, it could be a sound, it could be a memory. You know, for addicts, you know, my husband's age, it could be like that dial-up sound of the internet. There's certain cues that bring us back to reliving an experience. And so that's what I mean by triggers.
You know, you used a word in there that I don't want to just assume that people are going to naturally understand. You talked about even in yourself being dysregulated.
Yes.
Kind of in that season when that trigger came up. Can you talk a little bit more about what that means?
Sure. So there's a whole framework. I think it's called a framework. I'm not always the most clinical when it comes to terms, but people can look it up. It's called the window of tolerance. That will give you a good picture of what I mean by dysregulated. So when you are in your window of tolerance, it's where you can handle you can handle life and the stress, and you're not feeling overwhelmed, shut down, or hyper aroused, like frantic, panicked. If people don't know what hyper aroused mean, anxious, you're like, okay, this is happening. This is sad. This is maddening, whatever. Here's my plan. I can move forward. Maybe you feel a little bit of something with it and you're able to work yourself, you know, down pretty quickly. When I say I'm dysregulated, I'm either above my window of tolerance. So I've popped above, where I'm hypervigilant, anxious, panicking. When I talk about that electrical storm inside of me, like sweating, my heart is racing, you're on overdrive. When you're below your window of tolerance, you're in like depressive kind of feeling, shut down, let me just sleep. And so depending on how I'm triggered, if it's about John, I go hyper, like I am anxious, panicking. If I have like a writing project, I'm just like, let me take a nap. Let me just hope this all ends. So, I can bounce out of that window either below or above. And so what you want to do is try to use grounding tools. And so bringing yourself back to the present, box breathing, where you do inhale for 4 seconds, hold for 4 seconds, exhale for 4 seconds, hold, you know, they're all equal parts like a box. And that's a practice that you can use to activate the parasympathetic system, which slows you down and tells yourself that you're safe. And so using grounding tools to help you get back into your window, calling friends. And so, yes, that's what I mean by dysregulated.
That's good. Now, there's a word that I have generally associated with women. I'm not saying that there's absolutely no possible way that men can have this, but in my experience, I've never met a man that has this. And it's called intuition. Mm-hmm. There's like this sixth sense that many women have, and this ability to just kind of sense things, feel things, sort of get a vibe off of their husband, off of a situation. Now, when betrayal has happened, especially when there's been a lot of gaslighting and lying and deception and all of that, what effect does that have kind of on that gut, on that intuition? And how can a wife who's then maybe feeling those triggers in her betrayal healing start to regain any sense of trust in her gut, in her intuition?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is such a good question. Okay, so one of the things that I like to start with is validating that when your gut is sensing something, it is worth listening to. And so I'm going to read you this quote. It's one of my favorites because I love mixing the science with the scripture and the, you know, the relational work. So it's from the Cleveland Clinic. And it says, your brain talks to your gut and your gut talks back. If you've ever had a gut feeling, you've experienced this communication. It's how the thought of an exciting event make you feel butterflies, or something dreadful could be gut wrenching. And it's how the feeling in your gut can influence your decision making, as in going with your gut. Your brain communicates with your body all day through nerves, your nervous system. And so basically it's saying more information passes between your brain and your gut than any other body system. So scientifically, there is credibility that when we feel those things in our gut, whether it's butterflies or gut wrenching, twisting, we should pay attention to that, because our nervous system remembers things faster than we can put meaning to it and, you know, interpret the meaning. And our interpretation of what things mean, they could be skewed based on the information, like you touched on. If we've been gaslit, we can start going, okay, well, maybe that's not what I'm feeling. We can misinterpret what that is. And so first understanding that those little signals mean something. And sometimes you don't have all the information. And what I like to tell betrayed spouses, you don't have to go scanning for more information, because whether you're in a relationship with somebody who is chronically lying and not owning their recovery, or they're being very truthful, your body is still telling you that you don't feel safe or that there's something off. And so listen to it for yourself, because trying to put the ball in the court of an addict who may either be taking his recovery seriously or not, oh my gosh, that's where my hair fell out. Literally, it fell out. Trying to have my struggling addict husband be the one to help me calm down. I had to finally get to the point where I said, whether you're telling me the truth or not, I'm feeling very triggered. And I am really dysregulated right now. I'm not feeling safe. Something feels off. And so you're responsible for your recovery, but these are the things that I would need to see and want to see in order for me to feel safe with you right now. And then it's really, you get to decide if you want to do those. And based off what you decide, then I'll make my decision of how I need to keep myself safe. And so just starting to validate it and doing something to protect your nervous system, your mind, body, and soul, whether they acknowledge it or not, because we don't have control over that.
Yeah. And talk a little bit about just almost how those gut feelings, first of all, there's an aspect that you're talking about. There's kind of a healing of recognizing and validating and acknowledging those are real. But can you talk about maybe how at the same time, you've got to investigate the gut, because it's not always trustworthy either, right?
Yeah.
So can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, let me do it through an example. I have a perfect example of this. This is one of the examples that happened right before you emailed. So I was getting ready to go out of town on a work event, and I was totally fine. Everything was functioning normal. I was excited to go on this work event. It was an event back in Idaho where my older twins live, and I was like getting to see the twins. Nothing was wrong. And then a few hours before I was getting ready to leave, something just hit me like a ton of bricks. I started to feel anxious and panicky. And because I've been doing work to befriend my triggers, I'm like, what is my body trying to tell me? Why am I starting to feel this way? I'm pushing my husband away. And I was starting to get very emotional. And so what I did was I stopped and said, when do I remember feeling like this before? And what about this day, what I'm doing right now, is similar to a time in the past that was not good? And it just clicked right there. My mom is living with us. She's elderly and we take care of her. We do everything for her. And there was a time where she lived with us before where it was very stressful in our relationship because she was having some paranoia. And I was out of town on a work trip and John was relapsing. And part of it was, well, the home is stressful. Your mom's a lot to take care of, blah, 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 blah. And so being able to pin that down and then say to John, hey, I'm feeling triggered. And I was trying to ask myself when I remember feeling this way. And I think I pinpointed it. Can we sit down and talk? So then we sat down and I said, one of the last times I went out of town, it wasn't the last time, but it was last time my mom lived with us. The last time my mom lived with us and I went out of town, you had a major relapse and then you denied it. Then you gaslit me. I mean, I was like, he remembers all this, right? So we had already worked through that. He knew. And I said, so I'm starting to feel anxious that that's going to happen again. And it was great because he responded well. And he said, I'm really glad you talked to me about that. I can understand how you feel that way because of the way I lied and relapsed last time. That's not going to happen. But I also am not going to lie in saying it is stressful when you leave and there's the extra responsibility. So we made a game plan. We hired my sister to take my mom for the day and be her caregiver for the weekend. And we had good communication. But that's where that kind of investigation piece comes in that you're talking about. I had to say, when do I remember feeling this way? And is there validity in what I'm feeling? Which there was. There was a little fear that the same thing was going to happen. I'd be out of town. He'd relapse. The kicker is if you're a betrayed spouse, you can either have somebody respond that way and say, oh, yeah, I can see how you feel that way. Let me give you some extra security. Or they may not respond that way. And then you have to do what you need to do to help yourself without their help.
Yeah. And that kind of leads into my next question. How do you like know when it's okay either to like slow things down or pause or even put a boundary in place as part of the healing? Because like if you don't get that good response, is that a time where you go, all right, for my own sort of self-care and sanity, a line needs to be drawn or something needs to happen for your own health?
Yeah. And I mean, and that is the case sometimes. So, you know, I see this with women I work with whose husbands maybe are not as receptive, or I've had this in my own marriage before where there's a lot of, well, I don't see it that way. You're overreacting. Are you ever going to get past this? Will I ever get out from the magnifying glass? You know, just all the things. And that's where you hopefully with good friends, good support, good counsel, a group, you say, okay, if this person, my partner, my husband is never going to change, they're not going to acknowledge this, or even in this moment, they're not, then what do I need in order to feel safe? And so it could be for some women, it's like, okay, I can manage being in the same house, but maybe I can't manage being vulnerable sexually. And so I need to have a boundary of if I don't believe and trust that they're not relapsing, whether with porn or affairs or whatever, I can't let myself be that vulnerable. And so there is, it's trust is the foundation. And if you don't have that trust and you bring your pain or triggers to your spouse, pain and triggers that really they brought into your life, and you're not met with truth, validation, security, then you're kind of at a crossroads where you need to say, until I feel these levels of trust and truth, I can't move forward in whatever that may be. And that may be different for everybody. Sometimes it's a financial boundary. Sometimes it's a sexual boundary. And that's so individual to the person.
Mm-hmm. So in your own story, and maybe even also with some women that you've worked with that have experienced this betrayal, like what are some of the most common triggers that can sort of heighten this anxiety or lessen that window of tolerance? Like what are some of the most common ways that wives who've been betrayed get triggered?
Oh gosh. I mean, not communicating where they are, why they're late, not communicating where they're at in their recovery. Like I told my husband, it is so, it brings so much security to me when I wake up and I see you in your work, in your Bible, you're reaching for me. When you're doing the proactive reaching of communicating where you're at, what you're working on, how you're growing, what's exciting to you, whether it's spiritual or something you're learning. And so the lack of, you know, just seeing them in some of their guardrail behavior. So if you think of the three circles tool where your middle tiny, your inner tiny circle are those relapse behaviors. And then the middle circle are like staying up too late, drinking, going out with friends, watching inappropriate shows. Those are things that lead back to relapse. And then your outer circle are just good, healthy things that lead you away from relapse. And so when I see my husband spending any time in those guardrail, like those middle circle behaviors that he's kind of crossing that guardrail a little bit, that's when I start to feel triggered, or if there's any deception or mistruth. And so we get that tool out, that three circles exercise, and we actually try to write down the things that bring security and bring health in a relationship so that he has a visual. Like when you do these behaviors, it brings anxiety and I'm questioning where you're at in your recovery. And when you're in these behaviors, it's verifying trust. It's reestablishing a foundation for us. And so that might help in some relationships to have an actual visual.
Yeah, that's really good. Now, it seems to me like at the base of any of these triggers, it's really fear. Like there is a fear that is coming. So help us understand, help me understand, how do you befriend fear? Like, because that's what's coming up in a trigger. And you're saying, oh, we should befriend our triggers. And I think what I want some clarity on is what does that actually look like in practice? Because it seems to me like you're not necessarily saying, I want to have this really tight, close, friendly relationship with my fears and my triggers. But somehow you're saying there's got to be some kind of more positive connection with something that is it seems so unnatural. Mm-hmm. To think, yeah. Ashley, you want me to be friends with my fear? What are you talking about?
Yeah. Okay. Think about it this way. I have a chronic illness. My chronic illness ebbs and flows up and down all the time. It is doing what it's doing no matter what. When I go get blood work and my blood work comes back and says, I need more of this. I need less of this. Oh, I better back off the gluten. I better get back on my anti-inflammatory meds. It's information for me to have more direction to know how to help calm down what's already happening in my body. And so that's kind of how I view triggers, that there's something going on in your marriage anyway, and a trigger is bringing you information of an area where you either are feeling the same fear that you felt before, or maybe there's new information. I mean, you don't know, but rather than just shoving that trigger down and being like, I shouldn't be feeling that way, I should be past that, and then moving on, use it to help you root up whatever's there. And so when I say, let's see, an example would be, before we started this recording, you were talking about the measure of success is, you know, being in God's plan and being in his will and obedience, not necessarily being successful. I used to measure whether I was handling life okay based on whether I was checking off my to-do list. You know, if I was able to lead my groups, write my book, blah, 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 and I was able to get it all done, and everybody's like, I don't know how you do all that. And it's like, great, I'm successful because I'm doing all that. Then my hair fell out and I realized I'm doing too much because I was ignoring all the stress I was feeling in my body and just looking externally on whether I was making my calendar, you know, clear at the end of the week. I wasn't listening to what was going on in my body. And so that's where I'm saying we can just kind of get an autopilot and it can be normal. When I went to my rheumatologist and she said, are you feeling stressed? This was like 10 years ago. I'm like, no, I'm not stressed, because stress was normal for me. And I was so disconnected from my body. And so being able to use it to say, what is this information? And even for the addict, like when my husband gets a trigger, it's what are you hearing about yourself? Whether it's fear, and you have to say, okay, let's work through all the what ifs. When you're a betrayed spouse, you can start to feel hopeless and helpless when you don't think you have choices. And so the fear, they can be really awful double binds of, I could lose my husband. If I address this betrayal and stop ignoring it, there's a chance my marriage could end. There's a chance we could lose our job. There's a chance, you know, there's all these what ifs that are the underlying fear. And that creates this hopelessness and this depression. And that is not how God wants us to live. And so just being able to say, okay, well, if that happens, what would I do? Would I be okay? And working through those fears, it gives you just this confidence and this empowerment and saying that could happen, but I've got a God who takes care of me, and I'm smart, and I've got support, and we'll work through it if that happens, rather than just being stuck in those anxious, fearful feelings that are taking over.
When you said that, it made me think of, I watched a documentary of Martin Short's life, which is pretty fascinating. And he was getting all these, you know, gigs and everything. And they bought this really nice new house or whatever. And he was just so panicky about it. And he's like, man, what if the next job doesn't come through? And what if we can't afford this house? And his wife goes, we'll move. You know, it was like, yes, it didn't have to be a terribly complicated, but it was like you hold on to things in a way, and good things, right? Because you're saying, I want this relationship. I don't want to lose this spouse. But just the idea that you have options. Can you talk about that? Because sometimes fear is paralyzing. It makes you think you have this trigger And it's pointed at a very particular what if, or maybe a chain of what ifs. And it can feel like you have no other options. Can you talk about just maybe some freedom that there is to broaden the horizon of what's available to a wife when she's feeling some of these triggers?
Yeah, there are. I mean, and this would be the hope I'd want to leave with anybody listening, is that there are always options. And unfortunately, in life, when we're doing relationships with people, sometimes their choices can alter the direction of our life. And that's just a hard reality to swallow. I mean, we get women who email us for our podcast and they'll say, well, what if I tell him what I need and he chooses not to honor it? I'm like, that would be horrible and sad. And reality, that is sometimes the hard thing that we have to face. And so I always work through my options. I mean, like, I know where I'll live if I'm getting a divorce. I know what job if I'm going to get fired. And of course, God can do whatever. But when I start to feel that fear rise up, I need to remind myself that we have a God of provision, of protection, of healing. And so I kind of hold these two truths of what am I capable of doing, and also trusting that God will come through. And so for some betrayed spouses, there might be a real practical side of you may want to chip away at some classes, or you may want to look at what jobs you can do, maybe a little side job, and start storing money. That there's, if your marriage is really volatile and you don't know if your husband is going to lean in to do the work, there's just practical things that you can do and start educating yourself. Maybe you've never done the finances before, and this is a very common thing with betrayed spouses that I've talked with. So maybe sign up for a Dave Ramsey course and just learn about money and just learn about, and so whatever it is that fear is, that trigger, sit with it and say, okay, if he never stopped talking to his affair partner, if he never stops looking at porn, and I put in the boundary that, okay, we can live together, but we will never sleep together if you don't quit these sexual behaviors, or we have to have an in-house separation, or I need to start making moves toward leaving, sit with the fear and then sit with the grief of that and acknowledge that it is grief. It is a loss. I think where we get trapped is that we want to find a way where it doesn't hurt. And so I think acknowledging that it hurts, it's terrible, it's unfair, it's grief. Let yourself feel those things and then say, but I don't have to stay there. I don't have to then keep giving my power away and saying, this decision has been brought into my life and now I need to let it destroy me. That there's a phase of moving into post-traumatic growth, that when something awful does happen to us, we still get to decide how we're going to go forward from that, even though we couldn't control the grief and pain that came to us.
Yeah. And as you're saying that, there's something that's starting to come into my mind, because I'm, you know, we're talking a lot about what an individual wife who's been betrayed and how she can maybe respond to triggers and start to befriend that. But one of the things that popping into my head is like, there is a need for community as well for this wife. How important is it for her in this season of healing and navigating, you know, I don't know if I can trust my gut, but I've got triggers coming out the wazoo, you know, and how important is it for her to be in a community of other women who can not only identify, but maybe also be able to provide insight and help and wisdom and support for her as she's trying to navigate all the realities of these triggers?
I think it's like a non-negotiable. I think we heal in community, and we, especially when we're triggered, we have like tunnel vision. I mean, even as human beings, like all of us, we have this filter that we see the world through based on our upbringing and our trauma and our experience and our education and our community. All these things filter how we view the world. And so it's good just in when you're not in trauma to surround yourselves with people that don't think like you, to challenge your beliefs and challenge your perspective. And then of course, compare that to the truth of scripture and make sure it aligns. but when we're betrayed or when we're triggered, it's even more important, because we can just hyper-focus on, feeling safe, really, because our alarm systems of saying danger, danger, danger is going off. And so we are just, all of our systems are focusing on keeping us safe. And that's where we can start get even chronic illness of, okay, I don't need to digest my food right now, because my brain and body thinks that we're, you know, in total danger right now. And that's where all our energy is going. And so I believe wholeheartedly that women need to be in those support groups. sometimes when you're hearing somebody else share their answer and it's similar or they've gone through a similar experience, one, it just drastically knocks shame down because you're like, I'm not the only one feeling this way. You start to realize you're not crazy. This is very common. What you're going through has a name. And then you get ideas from listening to other people share, not in an advice giving way in a group, but you hear them share what worked for them. You're like, I want to try that. And then the third part of that is if you have a group where there's chat support, when I was first going through this, it'd be Trigger City. And then I would text my group, I'm so triggered, whether it was my mom talking about my curly hair or my husband. And they would just start reminding me of the truth. That's coming from their woundedness. That's not about you. This is the truth of today. And they would just help me. And then they would challenge me, what are you going to do to take care of yourself? So I wouldn't stay in that cycle of negative thoughts.
Yeah. And so I'm curious, what have you seen not only in your own life, but maybe some of the women that you've worked with? What have you seen change when you stop trying to fight the triggers and actually start trying to listen to them? What kind of changes have you seen?
It literally is like chains come off that, you know, in my early recovery. And what I see with a lot of women is that we're very attached and right or wrong, like we're made to be connected, interdependent. You know, we're made to be attached with our spouse, but when they're doing these things and our identity and worth and our world is being rattled because maybe we have to work for the first time, we just feel like we're pulled along with them, just being dragged behind. And so when you start to sit with your own triggers, get to the core of your fear, how are you feeling unsafe? And then you work out a plan, you give whatever you need to give to God, you've got your support group, you start to feel empowered. And there's this healthy separation of, oh, you're relapsing again. Okay, here's what I would need to see, but you need to deal with that and that I'm going to be okay. And so what lessens is the idea that I'm not going to be okay because you're not doing okay. And you start to have your own, I guess, really strong two legs to stand on so that you can make decisions regardless of what anybody else is doing around you, even if you still have to deal with the grief and pain of that.
That's so good. And I want to give you an opportunity to offer a word of hope, especially to the wives that are listening that are feeling like, listen, Ashley, you're hitting a nerve. I'm totally tracking with you. I'm in that hyper triggered state seemingly all the time. What hope would you have for them, especially if they're afraid that life will always be triggering and maybe always to the degree that it's triggering right now? Is there any hope?
Yes. Yes. What I know is that I used to live in a 100% triggered, hyper aroused state. Until I got out of it, I didn't realize that I was just chronically living like that. And that's probably why my autoimmune disease was crazy, out of control. And so I would just say, if you are not already in a group, you know, we offer groups at Pure Desire for women who have been betrayed. That would be the first step. And so getting a partner sensitive, trauma informed coach or therapist and joining a group would be the first steps, because like I said, it will start to reduce the thoughts. I'm messed up. I'm crazy. Like, I have a little thing about feeling like I'm constantly broken. And I need to remember that I'm not broken. Even 10 years later, when I get a bad trigger, it's my body responding normally and appropriately to some sense of fear. And so just reframing that you're not broken, but your body is trying to protect you. And so get with good friends and good support to figure out the next steps, because it's a long path and there's a lot of decisions to make. And so there's not one thing we can tell you to just get you through it other than get with the right support so then they can help you navigate the process of healing.
Yeah. Well, Ashley, as always, this has been such a good conversation. I always appreciate just hearing from you and allowing you to share with our listeners. But where can our listeners and viewers go to learn more about you and Pure Desire and what you guys have for wives who are struggling?
Yes. Just going to the main puredesire.org website. And then another spot that's really great for wives is once you're on that website, puredesire.org, or on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, we have a podcast specifically for women called Unfiltered, Real Talk About Sex and Love with Heather and Ashley. And we answer a lot of these questions. That's all our podcast is answering questions mostly from betrayed spouses, and then giving good resources and advice.
Well, as always, Ashley, great job. Thank you again for being with us.
Thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah. Well, listeners and viewers, we're going to put those links in the show notes so that you can access those resources that Ashley just shared. We want to help you take your next best step to wholeness in Christ. So please reach out to us, and we look forward to seeing you back here again next time on the Pure Sex Radio program. Take care.